Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Public Advocate. I am your host. My name is Sally O'Cordy, and I have the great honor of interviewing Robert Scott Bell, who is also the host of a radio show and one whom I have always said is a friend to New York. He has always allowed me to come on his program and talk about actions that we take to bring people's awareness to vaccine tyranny. Basically, we're at the tyranny tipping point. But I always say the crime is in the offering. It is a crime to offer poison to a child, let alone to inject them with it. So, you know, everything about this program is so disturbing once you realize what's happening. And I am calling for a moratorium, a national moratorium on vaccination now, and have been calling for a ban since 2009. So this is really not news to people who know me, but they're hitting the streets. That's what's happening. People in 20 different states have taken up this banner and are getting out in the streets with it, educating people. I've had petitions for years directly to Congress, and now we are petitioning the American public with the visual petition. And I ask everybody, when you see a picture with someone holding this banner, share it. That's how we will spread it online. So the people who are out in the streets doing that work, you can help them by every time you see a picture of someone holding a banner to share it. And I don't mean to groups. I mean to the people you know in your community, your own page. But anywhere you share it, of course, is very helpful. So I will post a new picture every day on my page on Facebook, which you can get to by going to tinyurl.com/vaccinefreenyc. tinyurl.com/vaccinefreenyc, and you'll see that under the screen as well for contact. Now, we just had an article written about this campaign for a national moratorium on vaccination now, and Catherine J. Frompovich is the person who wrote this article, and I am so indebted to her because it's published, it has a far greater reach. And, oh, my friend Robert Scott Bell is here. I'm going to pick him up forthwith. Hello, is this Robert Scott Bell?
Hey, Sally, how are you?
Oh, thank you so much for calling in and sharing with the audience why we need a moratorium on vaccination now.
Yeah, for sure. But first and foremost, thanks for sending me that big banner poster that we can get out there and take pictures with and I'm bringing it everywhere I go.
Well, you know, there's a big cancer conference you're taking part of that has about 50 top-level lecturers. If you would take a picture with each and every one of the people at that conference, I would be so gratified.
I will do my level best. I'm hoping Super Don, my producer, is there to help out because it's going to be a whirlwind that weekend.
Mary Toko is going to be there, and she's got a banner, too, so maybe she'll help out.
Oh, awesome. That would be great.
Yeah. So, now, Robert Scott Bell, you are the lone person who is dealing with this subject of vaccination, poisoning, and tyranny, who has the ability to be lighthearted, funny. You have levity. Quite frankly, prior to this, I ran the Museum of Comedy. Comedy was my life. Laughter was my life. Humor was my life. But now nothing's funny to me, so I take my hat off to you to be able to maintain your levity. I don't know how you do it.
Sally, honestly, if I didn't do it, I couldn't do this radio show 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. It would drive me, you know, bonkers, because it is. It's brutal when you see what these vaccines are doing to kids, much less adults. And there are a lot of other challenges that we have. And, you know, for me to put a spotlight on those things for folks that are on the fence or maybe have never heard about it, if I speak in terms, that are very depressing or only angering, that kind of emotion, it can drive you until you're burnt out. And I certainly wouldn't have lasted in talk radio since 1999 to today if I had focused only there. So for me, it's what allows me to bring this message to the folks and not just totally just lose it myself. And I think that, Sally, you know, knowing that you work with comedy, to find a way to bring it back in the worst and most brutal of circumstances, we have to find a light, a spark, something that's uplifting. And that's what we must do in the midst of this because, you know, quite honestly, I don't have to tell you and a lot of your audience to look at what these people, if I can call them people, are doing to children by mandating vaccines at all levels. You just feel like they're not part of the same race that we're part of in terms of the human race, humanity. Yet we have to deal with these folks somehow. And hopefully if we can't lift them out of where they are, we could certainly lift the people that are on the fence out so that they're no longer harmed or their children are no longer harmed in this way.
Well, we're going to have a comedy show, quite frankly, when we all can, you know, circulate our banners in our respective states and meet in now in November, because Congress is off from October 10th through November 11th, and they're not running for re-election. I'd really like to know what's going on there. Why are they in their home state in October, almost all of October, and an entire month from October 10th to November 11th? So I really would love to know why they're not in D.C., because they're not running for office. So I just want to put that out there. But, yeah, so we're going to have a comedy show called Risk Ridicule. Why do we say that? Well, take the Jimmy Kimmels of the world and those who ridicule people who care enough to educate others and protect their children, you know?
Right.
So we are ridiculed, and we risk ridicule to educate other people. And I found this, the title came from a woman in Maine. I had said to her, after I educated her as thoroughly as I could, and she was completely riveted, which was, refreshing. And I finally said to her, risk ridicule and save a child. And she really got it when I said that. That changed her perspective completely, because she realized I was doing that and trying to educate her. So we are going to do a comedy show. You must be in this show. You could host it. I mean, that would even be cooler, you know? But no, I really want your perspective in there. I want your jokes, your humor, and everything else. Tara Besner-Norman is taking part. She is just beyond hilarious. And Jermaine Mohammed is taking part from the Nation of Islam and the Atlanta Justice or Else. And I just got word from Virginia Young from Texas that she'll be taking part in it as well. So it ought to be a whole heck of a lot of fun, and that'll be in November. But so will Congress be in D.C. in November. So we'll keep you updated. Now, I want to talk to you about your mom. Your mom is so supportive of everything you do. I would like to know what you learned from her in regard to what you are pursuing currently.
Oh, well, yeah, mom's got a great story. Nikki, she's 82. She grew up in the Middle East when it was Palestine, became Israel, and then she eventually immigrated to America. She wrote a book about her story from A Life of Many Colors, from Israel to America. And, you know, she's been through things that we can't even conceive of here as people who grew up in the USA. Hardships and challenges and war and things like that, but she's found a way to survive. And I think one of the things
that
she stands, up against injustice. Yeah.
Well, this really seriously, this explains so much how you can be positive in the face of adversity. Okay, thank you. Now, I expected that you would say that she was always interested in nutrition, and instead you said something far more important. Cool. So now you guys lived in New York for a while, did you not?
Yeah, I was born at NYU Hospital. I came into this lifetime in
Manhattan.
So
were my kids.
Yeah, and then we got out of there by the age of six, and then went to Florida like a lot of good New Yorkers, and then kind of neutralized there, and then ended up becoming Southernized in Georgia for 30 years. And, so I'm an East Coaster for sure, but I became an adopted Southerner in a sense because I grew up in the heart of the South for all those years. But, you know, definitely appreciated the roots, but I definitely loved the warmth and hospitality that I found in the South.
Right. My husband's from the South, and he's living up north now. And what we both found when we met in Washington is that the degree of politeness has everything to do from where you're from. Because being from North Carolina, he said that everyone in Washington was so rude. And me being from New York, I thought they were all so polite.
Yeah, there are cultural differences that are significant around this country, different regions. And, you know, they call us one country, but you can go to different states and sometimes you'll look around and say, wow, culturally we're very different and diverse. And that's not a bad thing. I think that's why we had 50 states at this point that were supposed to be superior to the federal government, and the people, of course, superior to both. And that's why we did a Constitution class this weekend with my good friend Michael Badnarik, who was running for president in the year 2004. For the Libertarian Party, and his famous line that year when I interviewed him, when I asked him about mandatory vaccines under the Bush administration bioterror scares, was, okay, Doc, you bring your syringe, I'll bring my 45, and we'll see who makes a bigger hole.
Well, I have to tell you, I just addressed the National Vaccine Advisory Committee calling for a moratorium with the wise words of Vera Scheibner. I had reached out to her to get – I said I only have 3 minutes, and I'm addressing the National Vaccine Advisory Committee. And she said I didn't even have to tell her I was going to call for a moratorium because we're on the same page. So she gave me two minutes and 45 seconds worth of a speech that laid everything out and then at the end exalted natural immunity and explained why it's so important in under 3 minutes. I was impressed. But I needed scientific jargon to address these people because I refused to be dismissed, you know? And
yes.
So that's what I got. And then I called for a moratorium. But I have to tell you, they were talking. They have many speakers addressing, you know, all from other agencies and affiliated places. I was the odd man out at the end, you know? But they were saying, they, you know, talking about chipping all children. They really made it very clear that all children, you know, the big emphasis on all I thought was interesting. And then next, and I've heard from Mary Toko that this is right in the Department of Homeland Security, I don't know, literature, that they intend to force, if they have to force inoculate adults, they will, and utilize the Department of Homeland Security to do it. So these were kind of, you know, startling things, and it was really hard to get up and give my speech from a natural scientist and then call for a moratorium. I felt like Lord James of Blackheath at Parliament saying that $15 trillion is missing. You know how he was kind of like shaking the whole time?
Yeah, yeah.
I felt like Lord James of Blackheath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we need to take a better stance on this issue, as you have done for quite some time now, where, you know, tolerance may be considered good in terms of different thought forms and belief systems and things, but when other thought forms and belief systems involve enslaving children or harming children in the way that they do with, substances that you couldn't put in a baby bottle legally and have them drink, much less violate, you know, the will of the parents, the sanctity of the family. You can't look at it any way anymore as, well, we'll try to be nice to these people. No, these people have violated your right to life, liberty, and property, and that is a fundamental violation in the United States where it was entirely based, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, on that. So it isn't even a subtle violation. It's a gross violation that can result in the death of your child, or a life sentence supposedly to an autism spectrum that would not need to happen were it not for those toxic injections.
Yes, indeed. I was just thinking of all these other, my mind, you know, I'm thinking of all the things we need to talk about, and so now I'm at a loss of which one to choose. Robert, help me out here. You're a show host.
Well, I do this a lot. So, as far as whatever we cover the news cycle of the day, I think, you know, what was interesting this weekend with Michael Badnarik, who I mentioned earlier, we talked about this concept of forced vaccination. And, you know, it's such a repugnant concept that why it's not met with repugnance even from those who believe in vaccination, tells you how far we have lost a love of genuine liberty under the guise of protecting us from microbial boogeymen. You know, the concept of the germ theory as a basis for everything is a fear-based paradigm. I wouldn't call it a paradigm, it's a theory, but it's a belief system that has, you know, microbes lurking about and hiding, ready to attack us. And of course, their argument now is that if your kids aren't vaccinated, they're carriers and they're somehow dangerous to our kids, of course, who are vaccinated, or your, you know, whose ever kids are. And of course, on every level, it's such a patently absurd argument that why we give any credence to these people. Maybe they have a degree, a PhD or an MD, but that doesn't qualify them. Doesn't qualify them to be, you know, to be able to speak intelligently on the subject, much less force your children into this acceptance. So.
Well, I want you to know, I just, this is what I forgot. I just, before we went on air, I went to a Norway group and I said, we've got 20 states on board and growing in America. Do this in your country. And I put the article from The Natural Blaze. And then I went to South Africa, do this. Ireland, do this. Australia, do this. That's all I can say is unite to save our children. Call for a national moratorium on vaccination now. Anybody can use that poster, and I hope to God they do.
Well, and we will. Super Don's got one. My producer will get some pictures done and get them back to you so you can use them however, and we'll take it around and help folks you know, understand. I'm going to be speaking at the American Naturopathic Medical Association later this month in Las Vegas, but that's a group that definitely is on board with us in this regard. You know, then there's the Homeoprophylaxis Conference that's being held in St. Petersburg, Florida, October 7th, 8th, and 9th, and that's another group that is working on options beyond vaccination, homeopathic, that are safe and actually do work. So there's a lot of things happening. Of course, as you know, the old, tired, pharmaceutically conflicted media is not going to give any fair coverage to it if they cover it at all. So we continue to put the word out on my show and others like us.
Right, and I'm always here. I've got three shows, so if you ever need to pick up the slack, even if you're on the road and you need to just use a show for 45 minutes, I'll set one, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Every
I'm
once in a while, I have to take
anything that can benefit.
Yeah, sure. And again, find a way to laugh and be silly in the midst of brutality. And in many ways, that also is very off-putting for who I would consider the enemy of liberty and health freedom at this point. To see that we no longer are afraid of them is the worst thing that can happen for them. That we can ridicule them, it's the worst thing that can happen to them. To see that we can laugh at them for the absurdity that they represent, it's just, that's like worse than caning them. It's worse than torturing them because they're very ego-driven. And they're obsessed with this domination. And so recognize who these folks are so that you don't pay them any more mind than to point out the absurdity in which they live.
I'm glad you brought that up because Commedia dell'arte is the first recorded comedy. And that was born in making fun of the church and ridiculing the authorities of the day. And the oldest recorded joke happens to be about a doctor. And here it is. Oh, boy, I hope I don't screw this up. Well, I'll give you a funny one in the interim about a doctor that kicked me out of Sloan Kettering Memorial Hospital. I used to put on comedy shows there before I realized the vaccines were creating all those cancer patients. And it was, what's the difference between a doctor and God? Answer? God doesn't think he's a doctor.
Yeah, it's a classic.
And the oldest, oh, you know that one. Okay, well, the audience might not. Anyway, another one is a Commedia dell'arte. They have somebody, maybe Pantalone, asks Il Dottore, have you ever, the doctor is saying, I have the cure for heartache, ulcer, ingrown toenail, nosebleed. And he said, you do? Have you ever found that you've had to put one of your patients to death to overcome the illness? And he said, I know no other cure.
Hmm.
Maybe the timing on that was off. I don't know. But he only, that's, anyway. So that stemmed from Commedia dell'arte, and that's the first recorded joke.
Well, it goes way back, and of course, pointing out the dangerousness of the doctoring profession, although at one time they were teachers, now that they're basically paid to be pharmaceutical stooges, they don't think clearly, and so they're acting on very, very pale reflections of genuine medical information that would be helpful. And, of course, the kids are suffering. Our whole country is suffering under the Church of Pharmaceutical Mysticism Vaccine Division. And until we, step back and point out to them, put the dunce caps on them, they're going to continue to roll roughshod over many Americans who haven't been awakened to recognize that they were duped. And on this issue of vaccines, we were all duped at one time. Those who are awake now need to push back, and it is an appropriate and very righteous thing to do to push back on this, because the attack on children is, people can stomach some violence somehow, but they can stomach it to adults, but when it's visited on children, I don't know how anybody can put up with it for a second. And that's what we're seeing, vaccine violence. It's abuse, and these doctors should be taken out and put into prisons for doing this, but there's no liability thanks to the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program that was passed back in 1986. There's no excuse that they would not read the journal articles or read the original science to recognize the conflicts of interest or the outright fraud, as we've heard from the CDC whistleblower William Thompson on the MMR shot related to autism manifestation.
Well, in watching the old episode of 60 Minutes, and they're reporting that in one flu shot campaign resulted in $3.6 billion worth of a lawsuit. And from 1986 through 2016, that's in 1970s dollars, so please let us consider that we have to translate that amount. But from 1986 to 2016, in 30 years, with a multitude of vaccines, they have paid out $3.6 billion. So, this is so startling when I realized, the comparison was really kind of rocked my world. And the last show that I had set and put you on, actually the cover photo of that was the decision by the Supreme Court to uphold it. Now, let me tell you, I've spoken to Cynthia McKinney about this, because Lord knows I have signed a million petitions to undo this. Restore liability to the pharmaceutical companies. And I said, can this be done in light of the fact that the Supreme Court has upheld it? And she said, yes, Congress can still override that, even though they have initiated it, instigated it, enabled it, they can still overturn it. So I thought, okay, well, then these petitions aren't a waste of time, except for the fact that the Congress is not hearing us, and they are responding to every single letter I have written with those same old tired lies. And if you want to know how important Andrew Wakefield is, just look at your response from your congressman and see if he isn't the one-trick pony, as Del Bigtree calls it. Wakefield is their one-trick pony to get out of any responsibility to address this issue.
Yeah, it is a pretty weak thing that, every time you bring something up, you point to Andrew Wakefield. And, of course, he has been scapegoated to such a degree that his last name has become a verb to warn other doctors not to step out of the vaccine box and acknowledge that there's a problem. Again, that's why I say in many cases doctors represent the sheeple more than the sheeple do, because they're so frightened for their licenses and their ability to pay back their exorbitant loans to get through medical school that they don't act for that fear. They are under control. They are not free, sovereign humans at that point. You've entered the doctoring profession and you're conscripted. You're enslaved to a medical system. It's not a happy place to be. And, my uncle, the doctor, who, was a gift to me, I loved him dearly, but he warned me when I was a teenager. He said, don't become a doctor because it's a disaster. This is what is happening. And he described to me, and predicted exactly what would happen on the way toward Obamacare. And this was back in the early 80s, he was telling me this. So it's not a great thing to be a doctor, in a sense, when you have to rely upon obedience to the state or state-sanctioned pharmaceutical mandates. I'd like to see doctors be free to do what they're genuinely trained to do in helping people rather than harming people. But the money being paid to these pediatricians in particular with vaccine compliance is just, you want to talk about conflicts of interest. It's extraordinary, just the man, you know, the participation in the vaccine, what would you call it, the implementation for the kids in their practice.
Well, I've always said we have to lift the school loans. If we are to forgive one group of people their school loans, it has to be healthcare workers if our children are to survive. That is one thing we could do immediately is, you know, take the rest of that compensation fund without any way to any meaningful way and pay off all those healthcare workers' school loans, because I'm so scared that they are literally driven to do this. Now, Joel Wallach has said that doctors' average lifespan is 56 years. I thought that was very, very early. And then I just read an article that you may have already addressed on your show, and if not, you probably should. It's an article written by a woman who has basically walked away from the medical profession and said that it was absolutely abusive in school. It was an abusive situation, and people grow up to be abusers to their patients. Basically, they come out of this experience as abusive and callous. And she was saying that she had to return to patient care, and that she asked her patients, what do you want in a doctor? What is it that you want? This is what I want to provide, which is, you know, enlightened, but you really do have to step outside the box in order to achieve that. But the suicide rate is what she was saying is so startling, and especially among the students. And I probably, this is what has to do with the overall age being 56, that so many are so disillusioned and that they are actually committing suicide.
Well, yes. If you went into a profession for the right reason, like doctoring and healing, and you find out that it is anything but healing, and that you are controlled and manipulated and programmed on some level, if it's not overt, and maybe deep inside you, you've got a conflict in your very own, you know, all the way down to your soul. And at that point, that's going to manifest as psychosis or something else that could, you know, shorten your lifespan, if not outright result in you taking your own life. And I think that's a big explanation. Now, it's also the exposure to the toxic chemicals in many ways and the things that they utilize, but also maybe you're right, the utilization of those very substances like SSRIs or antidepressants, anti-anxiety drugs, because of the depression that is induced by being a doctor licensed and controlled by the medical police state. It's not just about the parents and the families in California that are being controlled. It's about the doctors themselves being controlled. And so if they just stood up in mass and said, no, we're no longer doing this, we're not going to participate in your madness, it can be over today. But so would it be if all the parents aligned and said, you know what, even if you believe in vaccines, this mandate violates fundamental freedom. And yet we don't see that. We haven't seen that as of yet. So we still have a ways to go. And I know you're leading the charge as well out there and continue to rattle the cages until the people wake up and recognize this for what it is.
Right. I want to tell you about a very important interview that I heard between Dr. Rebecca Carley and Dr. Jennifer Daniels, two healers whose licenses have been removed. What transpired during that conversation, because Jennifer Daniels has not just a medical degree, but a Wharton MBA. So she has worked in many different areas in the medical field. And one of them was accepting students into medical school. And she said everybody scores well. Everybody who takes the test, they don't take it unless they know they can score well. So basically, that's a given. How do they accept students? And this, to me, was very disturbing, and it applies also to law school. And this is how they accepted them. First of all, if you were the child of a doctor, you were accepted. Doesn't matter if you didn't do well in school, you're just accepted. And then also, if they have certain questions on the standardized exam, like questions 16, 42, and 78, and those questions are intended to judge your ethics. And if you score in a way that suggests you don't have ethics, that's another reason to accept you into medical school. That is a huge thing to say. And it applies to the law school, too. I find that fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is where it's gone. I mean, the thing is, they need some level of intelligence baseline. Of course, you can study and remember things, become a doctor, but they really need obedience. They have to have obedience. And, I was just not willing to play that game. I couldn't. It goes against everything in me to just be willingly obedient to things that I know are wrong, untrue, harmful, etc. And for too many, for the sake of just getting along, they go along, and of course it's a devastating impact, as I said, on their psyche. There may be deep levels of guilt that contribute to emotional discordance, but it isn't, the most wonderful profession to be in. The doctors that I find are the happiest are the ones who have just pulled out of the so-called insurance system and are now in a special area where they're looking to work integrative holistically and respond to the patient's needs directly and don't work through third parties, government, state-mandated insurance, etc. How long that will be allowed to continue to exist in an era where Obamacare is failing rapidly, I don't know. But the people are speaking, the people are leaving, and that's why they had to mandate it 100 years after the Flexner Report was published in 1910, leading to Obamacare in 2010. So we are at a crossroads, certainly. And this election cycle is rather interesting, too. When you look at the Hillary Clinton and pharmaceutically funded candidate that she is, versus Donald Trump, who takes very little, if any. I don't know what kind of pharma money he's got, but he's also very aware of the vaccine injury issue because he knows it very, very closely, personally. So he's not someone you can tell him that vaccines are safe and he will let that go.
Actually, the last time he ran, this is not the first time he ran, he almost ran last time. But what stumped him was the vaccine issue. So I think on the third Republican debate, when the host of it, or the whatever you call those people who run debates, he asked him a question about vaccines, I do believe, to get him out of it. And he turned it right around. He stood his ground. He got Carson and Paul to concur with him. Paul, not a hard fight, but nonetheless, two doctors, and everyone else on the panel to say, too many too soon. Woo! That was huge. Mm-hmm. I thought of all, if I live another 100 years, I will never make the difference this man has made in a matter of moments by standing his ground.
Yeah, it should be a lesson at this point that it is no longer a losing issue that they can tar and feather you with. If you stand your ground, there are too many who are aware of it. And if you push back a little bit, it's going to expose the lies in total. And they know it, so they're very nervous about Trump on that level as well. So there are a lot of things that cannot be contained and suppressed and thrown a blanket over to hide anymore. And that is, again, it's a good thing, but recognize it can be a very volatile situation because those who have been dominant on this planet in terms of the medical church are willing to use violence on a daily basis just in the everyday course of their practice against children. What would they not be willing to do to protect that monopoly and control over families, over children? That's something that we all have to take a strong consideration at and recognize that they basically operate on threat and violence and fear. And so is it appropriate to meet them at that point or at least let them know that their intimidation and violence is not going to frighten us anymore? We will not back down, and they risk something far greater if they come after our children in the way they've been doing it for generations now.
Well, I've been saying to adults at this point, because you have been educating them and I have been educating them, and it's very clear the threat to our children and the reality and the playing out of that threat and their ill health and early demise. So what we're saying is being proven, and we are speaking as a result of all that has happened. So I am beginning to say to people, you know what? forced adult vaccination is upon us, and I am going to become the level of advocate in favor of it if you don't stand up now and protect the children. I'm going to go to the other side. I'm going to be rah-rah forced adult vaccination unless you will stand with me now and stop the murder of the innocents.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, it's time to be very direct and vocal and not hold back in terms of calling it what it is. Put them on the defensive, because there is no reason at all that we need to be on the defensive on this issue. We have nothing to defend. They have everything to defend. And they have everything to lose. Of course, we don't want to lose our children, because many of them have been lost to this war on children that vaccines represent.
I have to tell you, when I had my first child at NYU, I remember I was in a room with five people, including myself, and two of those children died. One of them had tremendous jaundice, which, of course, is a result from these either the vitamin K or the hepatitis B shot. And another child died. I don't know the story behind that, but these children were born. They were alive. So 20% of the room that I was in back in 1990 died. So I know that they gave my child shots and I didn't approve it, or so I thought I hadn't, but I had signed something before they took me in for a C-section after 22 hours. In labor, my signature looked like a mountain. I had no idea what I was signing, but probably I had signed away the fact that they could inoculate my child. But I'm just telling you, out of five, two died. And this jaundice issue is very serious.
I didn't hear that last statement you made. Which issue?
The jaundice. The jaundice that's resulting from
the jaundice issue.
Alcohol.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's indicative of a liver congestion, a toxicity issue. And I think it is caused indeed by the Hep B vaccine and anything else they're doing in there. There could be some prenatal issues as well. I won't deny that. But the medical profession really doesn't know what to do with liver congestion, because everything that they do, whether it be from them and their drugs or vaccines to the dietitians that are the lapdogs to the pharmaceutical profession, promoting the use of synthetic substances rather than food, is only going to add to the mess that's there. And then, of course, the use of Tylenol in response to inflammation, swelling, pain, whatever they're doing after these shots, it stops the production of glutathione, or at least greatly reduces it. So the detox pathways are immediately congested. And so that adds to the burden on the body that's already burdened, and in many cases can accelerate the worst of scenarios like death.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing my attention to that issue of glutathione and Tylenol, because a friend of mine, Sarah Carrasco, had wrote an article recently about that issue, and I asked her please to deliver it to the IACC, Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee, because you had stated that there was 298 times less autism in Cuba as a result of Tylenol only being available through prescription. It was not something you could just say, give it to the baby. And I've heard, by the way, they're giving the children Tylenol before and after the vaccination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's irresponsible. Again, it isn't like doctors aren't capable of opening up the medical literature, the peer-reviewed literature that they like to throw at us, even though the peer-reviewed literature they point to in relation to vaccine safety and efficacy is compromised because it's funded by the very industry that basically seeks to benefit by the approvals. And, you know, Merck is now defending itself in a trial that shows that they spiked, you know, the MMR, the mumps, doesn't work because they spiked it with rabbit's blood just to show that there were some antibodies that aren't really elicited into being by the MMR shot. So mumps is on the return, and then they say, well, you need a third mumps shot, rather than acknowledging that it doesn't matter how many mumps shots they give you, that entire vaccine is completely without merit. And then, of course, the relationship and link to autism has been suppressed and covered up within the CDC. So there's no lack of criminality in the behavior of the drug industry, the pharmaceutical industry, as well as the legislators and regulators that are promoting this practice of the doctors that are ultimately delivering it.
In Oregon, there was a legislator at the state level who had proposed the equivalent of SB 277, and it did not fly. She said, next year I'm coming back, and we are going, and at the time, I thought it was just a money grab for the pharmaceutical industry, but I'll tell you why I think differently now. She said, next year I'm coming back, and we're going to have require titers from every single child for every single shot, and that'll be the new law that I propose. So it sounded like a money grab to me. It's a pharma. But then my friend Kathleen Colfer-Saravalli from New Jersey is an activist and has an autistic child. She said that her child had received four shots of one kind of vaccine, no titers. Three shots of another, no titers. Two shots of another, no titers. So the whole issue of titers is buckets. And this is, you know, as Vera Scheidner says, it's so unscientific. Well, sounds like.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely incredible that we have to do what we do to just kind of push back a little bit, much less get the moratorium that you're pushing for. There's no amount of, for instance, the MMR shot that's going to elicit mumps titers. So that's the, you know, the sad irony of what they're claiming is like, well, we'll check you for titers. You keep going back for the MMR shot, you're never going to get mumps titers. And, you know, if you haven't gotten autism by the first shot, what about the second, the third, the tenth? I mean, where does it end? These people need to be imprisoned for their crimes against humanity at this point. And I know that's shocking for some to hear, not your audience typically, but that is a reality. One day you'll look back and you'll see what extreme barbarity was involved in promoting this this reckless campaign of injecting toxic poisons along with biologics and other things just to elicit their holy grail of an antibody, which could have been done safely had they been exposed to the given components that supposedly manifest as the disease, a rite of passage that can actually strengthen immunity, keep kids free of allergies and asthma and autoimmune diseases and even cancer later in life. But that discussion isn't even being had because it's all about arguing whether vaccines work or not. And that's why I like you just taking it out and saying, you know what, you guys are just, you're wrecked in the head. Stop this insanity right now.
Well, the videos of the children being infants, toddlers, or like seven-year-olds getting these multiple shots at once, I say to people, you must share these because some people, while they may not understand that poison is bad for children for some reason, perhaps they can get the torture aspect, you know, and so I have found myself, I took a whole month just to share videos of children being tortured multiple times and their reactions because I thought, how are we going to get through, man? How are we going to wake these people up?
Yeah. Well, it's a matter of persistence. Not everybody will be woken up. I have to make peace with that. You do. We all do. But those who are ready, we continue to speak out for them and their kids. And if we can protect one, it's worth it. Obviously, if we can protect 1,000 or 1,000,000 or more, that's even more so. But even one is worth it. So, I don't look at the end game necessarily as much as that every day somebody new will hear the message and one fewer child will be harmed.
Well, I hope you will host Risk Ridicule when we get to Washington in November. That would be absolutely, I would adore that.
Well, I want to learn more about it from you, Sally. And we can talk off the air about it.
I did write to you, it was in the letter I sent along with the DVD of Validated at Vaxxed, which is all the interviews with the parents after the show, and breaking the news in Manhattan on television. I broke that news within 3 days on TV in Manhattan. But nonetheless, all these parents saying how they're validated, how people have been poo-pooing and ridiculing them and treating them poorly, as one woman said, this was so important. I hope you will repeat it and everyone who hears it. If my child had cancer, my entire family would have rallied around me. My entire community would have rallied around me. But my child was vaccine injured, and all I have received is abuse and ridicule.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the cruelty doesn't seem to end. So as I said, parents, stand up. Do not be dissuaded by anyone who would throw names